Tonight, James watches Idiocracy, Troy watches George Carlin, and Mike votes for no one.
So it's my great pleasure today to welcome author Troy Grice to the show. Troy, how are you?
I'm doing well, thank you.
Awesome. So Troy, just to get things started real quick, who is Troy Grice? What got you on this author path and this sort of freedom author path that you're on?
I got the itch to start. I've always had the itch to write, but I finally got the stick-to-itiveness to finish something after the crisis in 08. I wrote my first self-published novel, Goldstein. And then the next one, Indivisible, that I wrote, it was about a desperate father trying to survive amidst a total economic collapse and a hyperinflation event in America. And that had some success with that self-publishing. And then I submitted it to Prepper Press, and they took it and ran with it. We re-edited it and repackaged it, and Derek of Prepper Press put it out again, and it did pretty good. So he asked for a couple more, and in addition to a sequel to Indivisible, I wrote this. I had this Oathkeeper idea,
right?
We put that together. So it's tons of fun. You know, it's like anything. It takes, you know, you got to write a million words before you're. Before you can describe yourself as good, so or great, I guess. I think I'm a good storyteller, but the writing is a process. You know, Ernest Hemingway didn't come out of the womb as a great writer. So, we went through this thing 18 times. It's been professionally edited, I think it's a great story. I think people would enjoy it.
Yeah, I have a review copy of Oathkeeper. That I've not read because as a reviewer, I get sent a lot of books and I'm a fairly slow reader. So I have a backlog, but I have read Indivisible and I reviewed that, I don't know, slightly after you put it out, I guess.
Yes.
And that was really, so like I said, I have read quite a bit of, you know, sort of prepper fiction, dystopian. Like I've always read sort of dystopian fiction anyway. And yours was on like sort of my top 10 list of, you know, favorite books because a lot of them have like little weird things I sort of don't like. Sometimes yours had less that I didn't like. you know, like your characters felt relatable. Like I could actually like envision myself in your story. You know, as opposed to some where people feel like they're cardboard and they're like one dimensional. You know,
so they're invincible Rambos. You know, they just and everything just magically, luckily. Bails them out of all the worst case situations they get into, which is
I hate that too. Yeah. One book I read, which was sort of far fetched, like some scientists engineered a plague to wipe out mankind because global warming was going to kill everyone anyway. And in the book, the guy's when he shot people, like they literally flew off their feet. Through the air and like hit shelves and broke stuff. And I'm like, what? What cheesy 80s movie is this, man?
80s movie. That's just about every movie today.
Yeah. So that's ridiculous. Yeah. So, like I said, I've not started Oathkeeper yet. So why don't you tell me and the listeners about Oathkeeper, the sequel?
Sure. So Oathkeeper is set in a fictional county in Colorado called Calumet County. It's based actually on Chaffee County, Colorado, and I just got an echo on the audio, but there is a town there called Buena Vista, but in the book we call it Calumet City. But it's about a sheriff and a veteran of Afghanistan who comes back into the town and intervenes in a mass shooting event at an Alco store. And saves several lives and is a local hero. But then his wife, he ends up losing his wife to an accident related to the war on drugs, gets in trouble or is a suspect in a crime after that fact. And then the federal government doesn't like the verdict in the trial, so they come back to get him to retry him again. And so it falls into question the whole Fifth Amendment issue of double jeopardy. So the sheriff's put in a position where he has to either acquiesce to the demands of the Department of Justice and hand this local hero over for retrial, or stand his ground and follow his oath and risk his career, definitely his career, and possibly his health and safety, keeping this guy out of the Department of Justice's hands. So there's a lot of it's not a white hats, black hats kind of story. It's a lot of gray hats and a lot of moral ambiguity, which I think is more realistic to the way real life is.
Yeah, I like how you sort of contrast that in your books. Like, some people paint all, you know, government law enforcement as in a positive light, and you show both sides. You know, in Invisible, you show the good soldier that couldn't deal with, you know, turning his gun on American people and then left, and in this you have a sheriff that's trying to make that moral, you know, decision of the Constitution. I like that. I like that you show that, you know, obviously the we're pretty anarchist here on the podcast, so you know, we're okay with bashing the government when they do stupid stuff like that, for sure. And but you know, if they do good stuff, we'll point it out too, though.
Yeah, it's interesting you say you describe yourself as anarchist. That's kind of a hot word for a lot of conservative people, and I tend to consider most conservatives are like anarchists in process. You know, they haven't quite gotten there yet. They got that phase, and they got to graduate to libertarianism, and then they graduate beyond that. You know, seeing that, you know, if we can reduce government this much, we can reduce it a little bit more and just keep going and keep going. But that's actually who the audience is for the book, because you know, the undercurrent of the whole book is the war on drugs. And how absurd it is, and what an assault on personal liberty and personal freedom it actually is. I mean, if you have self ownership in a society, if your society claims itself to be a free society with where human beings are sovereign, then they have self ownership. You know, there's no way to, you know, you know, make that just a little bit of self-ownership or you know, a little bit more self. It's either you have it or you don't. So if people ingest chemicals and, you know, ruin their lives, it doesn't seem to fit in the concept of a free country to go around with send people out with guns to herd them up and lock them away in cages. It just doesn't seem to fit. You know, the vast majority of the public is just not there yet. They don't see it in that. They don't see the morality there. They don't have can't answer that moral question yet. So I'm trying to do my part to help push the nut a little bit in that regard.
We liked it. I think it's interesting that you set this book in Colorado and focus on the war on drugs, which to me, the path to freedom is sort of, you know, paved with like guns on one side and, you know, marijuana on the other side. Like, they're like the duopoly of, you know, freedom to me. And big props to Colorado for legalizing marijuana.
That's just the way you said that, it just reminded me of that one critique somebody once gave you about you as an anarchist, saying that you're not an anarchist, you're just a violent hippie.
Yeah.
Just had guns on one side and weed on the other.
Yeah. Which, you know, like, the liberals are very pro-marijuana, you know, legalizing it, but they can't see that, you know, you can't have one freedom without another. Like, you should accept that another person is allowed their freedom if you're going to have your freedom, you know. If marijuana was legalized tomorrow, I wouldn't go smoke it, but, you know, I sure as hell hope that people have the right to go buy it, you know.
But, and everybody was projecting, you know, the hard right, pro-drug war, pro-police state. You know, I call them like this is kind of this might be kind of esoteric or something, but I call them like a hierarchical hegemonists. You know, they want the society defined from the top down, and you have these hierarchies of elite that lord over us like some system invented by Plato. You know, where you know they get to sit around and think and pass laws and tell you what's right and what's wrong. That's kind of like the low level conservative to me. Forgot where I was going with that, but everybody predicted that in Colorado it was going to be chaos if we legalize recreational marijuana. You know, people will be overdosing on pot and crime rates will skyrocket. And just the opposite's happened. It's like if you look at the alcohol prohibition in the 20s and 30s, you know, that created the gangs, you know.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Some of them more legal than others, but you know, the Kennedys being one example, but you know, the violence and the massacres of gangsters and the shoot-ups in the streets of Chicago and wherever else, that was a function of prohibition. Because once the commodity is made illegal, you push it into the black market, and then the only people who are going to produce this good and sell this good are the people with no moral inhibitions. You know,
yeah.
the moral businessman isn't going to get into that industry because he doesn't want to go to jail. You know, he fears prison or fears some kind of reprisal from the government. So it attracts all the slugs of society into the industry, and that's exactly I think what's happened with the drug. With the war on drugs today, the reason it's so violent in this country is because the war on drugs, or because of the war on drugs, the industry attracts gangsters to it. So it becomes, and then it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy for the government. It's like, well, look how violent, look at all this violence related to drugs. You need even more war on drugs, you know, in addition to the $60 billion we spend every year, and the 3 million people we have locked in cages. We need to spend even more and build more prisons and lock even more people up because you know, gangbangers are running wild in the inner city or something.
Yeah, I just don't understand the war on drugs, especially marijuana. Like as like number one, like I don't see any negatives from legalizing marijuana, as Colorado is proof, you know, and so much bad from, you know, the prohibition on marijuana. I just don't get it.
Yeah, people going to jail for decades for possession, you know, for possession with intent to sell or whatever the reason is. But that's one of the main themes in the book is the war on in the novel, which is a fictional story, but the collateral damage of the war on drugs, you know, the proliferation of SWAT team raids, proliferation of the erosion of our civil liberties, especially the Fourth Amendment, the militarization of our police, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Andy Griffith now has an international Max Pro mine resistant ambush protected vehicle in his department, so he can patrol Mayberry and, you know, write people jaywalking tickets.
Ridiculous. Yeah.
It's just ridiculous.
Yeah. I haven't kept up with it a lot, but is there a lot of federal intrusion in Colorado about, you know, the legal marijuana there? Because I know in California there's like almost weekly busts. Like they would get like used to it. They're like the feds would come in and they'd basically like just steal their money, have the register, you know, and smash their plants and then leave. And it's
and that's a medical dispensary.
Yeah,
that's just outrageous. It's outrageous. They've kind of stayed out of here. I think that's actually a credit to Obama. I'm not a huge fan of him, but he's called the dogs off. Now there's Republicans running for president that if they win, that's all going to change. For instance, Chris Christie, who says that, who is to paraphrase here, said the drug war, people that use marijuana have no self-control, and you know he's going
to fix it. For the love of God.
I love that quote more than anything else. A man that's over 300 pounds should not lecture anyone on self-control ever. I love that quote. Yeah. I could literally talk about the drug war all day. We've kind of touched on it a little bit, and I want to move on. We've kind of touched on it, but what is your personal political philosophy?
I started out as a conservative, kind of a paleo conservative, more like a kind of a non-interventionist Robert Taft kind of conservative. And then, I kind of became more neocon in my 20s, neo-imperialism. We've got to beat down the savages around the world. And otherwise, it's going to be another Dark Ages. And then I evolved out of that back into libertarianism. And then kind of the Ron Paul campaign kind of stoked those flames a little bit. And then from there, I've become so cynical about the political process. I kind of fashion myself more of an anarcho-capitalist now. I think libertarians are the worst because they just carve each other up over little things. I mean, they just, it's like herding cats with that movement, because as soon as you get them all in one room, they're scratching each other's eyes out. But, I think I take a broad definition. I try to apply a broad definition of libertarianism and not let the perfect be the enemy of the good. And that is anyone who believes that in every case we should make government smaller, is a libertarian to me.
Yeah.
So, if you're always making it smaller, it's moving. The needle's moving in the right direction.
Yeah, I agree with you about the libertarian movement a lot in that way. That there's too many, and somewhat some of the anarchists who they're too puritanical. It's either no government or fuck it, we're doing nothing here. And that's just, you're right. Anything that moves it closer to less government, and more freedom. By all means, let's move it that way. I just don't get some of the libertarians in the movement there. And you're right. They just hate each other. It's all like attacking each other. It's the pro-aggression principle with some of them. I don't get it.
Yeah. One of the classic one is like Ayn Rand versus the libertarians. And it's like they agree on like 99% of everything. But they have differences on 1% of issues, and then they're blood enemies to the grave now to this day because of that 1%. It's like you can't let the perfect be the enemy of the good.
Yeah, absolutely not. We're kind of flunking around here. So in Indivisible, you hit on police corruption a little bit. I'm sure you ruffled some feathers with that. Can you tell me about that? Like, did you get any death threats or anything?
No, but I got a lot of nasty reviews on the Amazon site from the pro Law and Order crowd. The funny thing is that there's good soldiers and there's bad soldiers in that book, and there's good police and there's bad police and good deputies and bad deputies in the book. And they butt heads, but it's like some people just don't want to acknowledge that there are police that are human beings that have a different moral compass than this idealized vision that they hold in their head. It's kind of like the whole notion of cognitive dissonance. It's like they can't Like in 1984, in George Orwell's 1984, he talked about, and that was a profoundly affecting book for me, and I've read it multiple times. But there's a concept of doublethink, where people are conditioned to hold two contradictory views in their mind simultaneously and not have any cognitive dissonance about it. Not even. It's like, well, how have we accomplished this through our mass media and our schooling or whatever to get people to hold, two totally opposing views in their head and not feel the least bit of any dissonance or concern about it? It's amazing to me. But the human mind's an amazing thing. It can be to do just about anything or believe anything, really.
I don't know if you read a lot of well, you just said you read that. There's a book series that I've been reading sort of off and on over the past several years, and it's a fantasy series. But the guy, I can tell, is either anarchist or libertarian, and he weaves that into this sort of fantasy series that he writes. It's the Sword of Truth series by Terry Brooks. No, Terry Good something. Frap. Terry Goodkind. It's basically like a giant war between these two different worlds, and one basically like they're ruling with doublespeak. I mean, the emperor is basically telling people all this stuff, like, you know, it's if you get a chance, it's worth checking out, just to sort of the undertones. Yeah. Like, it's really good like that.
But a classic example of doublethink is when I see very pro law and order Republicans, very pro police state Republicans, invoke that they're the party of liberty and freedom on one hand, and then on the other hand, it's like you ask them, you say, well, you know, what about legalizing marijuana? What about the NSA wiretapping all our phone conversations and text and storing them in a database? And it's just like their eyes just gloss over, and they're like, it becomes like the movie Spinal Tap, where Rob Reiner asks Nigel, he's like, well, you know, your guitar amp goes to 11. He's like, isn't that the same as 10? And he just like his eyes gloss over, and he goes, it goes to 11. He just doesn't even want to.
Yeah.
We're the party of freedom, you know. They just gloss over, and that's their position. That's classic doublethink in that case.
Yeah, a good example of that. I'll see if I can find the video and put it in the show notes for people. A couple years ago, during the last election, 2012, this guy went around. I think it was maybe change.org or something, or Truth something. Not Truth. They're the cigarette people. He went around with like this list of facts, and he's asking people on the street. He was like, so if Mitt Romney's elected, he wants to pass like this NDAA bill and this other stuff, and he wants to drone these kids in Yemen. You know, he's going on and on about this stuff. And, you know, everyone was like, no, that's stupid. I'll never vote for him. He's an idiot. Like, you can't do that. And at the end, like, after he reads all these facts to all these people, he's like, oh, these are actually all things that Obama has already done. You know, they're like, their eyes gloss up. They're like, no. He's Obama. Come on now. You got to let him get it. Like, what? No.
I see
that. You were angry one second, and then you're just like, you justified it the next second. And only one person out of everyone he talked to was like, okay, I'm going to go look this stuff up. Like, if this is true, you know, and these are all like CNN, you know, like big news stories, like reported things. And he's like, I'm actually going to change my opinion. Everyone else is like, no, that's fine. It's Obama.
Yeah, but it's just a prime example of the whole two-party blindfolded hypocrisy.
Yes.
That I'm witness to. Like, I have one of my best friends is this like dyed-in-the-wool Republican. He literally, you could put Hitler up running as a Republican. He would vote for him because he's a Republican, because he would be running under the Republican Party.
He'd rationalize it. Yeah, they do that. It's almost like it's almost like they're too. They sense something's wrong. They sense something's amiss, but they're too lazy to do any of the to formulate their own philosophy. Because it's hard, you know. When you build a philosophy inside your mind, you've got to kick the tires on it. You got to test it. And a lot of times it forces you into conclusions you're not comfortable with. And people in this day and age, you know, people, you know, they want 12 second sound bites. They don't want to be introspective about anything. I mean, only assholes are that way, you know, that buzzkills at the party that do that. So like they root for their party, that their political party becomes, it's almost like they're rooting for a brand or a logo. Like, it's either the Jackass or the Dumbo, you know. It's like, that's my football team, you know. It's the Broncos or the Panthers. I'm going to root for them no matter who says what or what they do or what kind of people they are or what they believe in. All I care about is the logo, and I'm going to stick to it. And that gives them an anchor, a political anchor in their life without having to do any of the legwork. But that, you know, that's like they call that the Hegelian dialectic. It's a problem, create the problem, and then create the solution, and then make that a problem and then create the solution on the other side, and then you just ping pong ball people back and forth on the road to serfdom, you know? So it's,
yeah.
I don't vote, by the way. I don't know what you, I mean, I think voting is
it's a waste of time.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
In addition to a waste of time, it sanctions the process. It validates the process. And so if you vote, I take the George Carlin approach. If you vote, you have no right to complain because you entered the game knowing in advance that what the result, the outcome is going to be, win or lose, and you mm-hmm. still own that resolution, that process. So you have no right to complain if you vote. I, on the other hand, don't vote, so I have every right to complain about the system because I haven't condoned or sanctioned it. And you're right, it's a waste of time anyway because it's winner take all, and no election's ever been of any significance has ever been determined by one vote. So
no.
Whether the donkey or whether the jackass beats Dumbo, by 88,400 votes or 88,399 votes, what difference does it make?
Yeah.
See, and that's exactly how I feel on it. And I've made a moral decision that I'm never going to vote until they do two things. One, abolish the Electoral College, and two, abolish the party system. Yeah. I don't want people running under political parties, and I want it to be like whoever gets the most votes wins. We've had at least seven presidents that lost all the popular votes, but because of the Electoral College, got inaugurated.
Yeah.
It's the
only way. So in the last election, I voted for Gary Johnson, which was cool because something happened here in Tennessee where he was on the ballot and then some paperwork got finagled and he got thrown off the ballot. And we had to go down there to the courthouse and sign the petition to get him back on the ballot. But to make it legal, Gary Johnson had to emergency fly into Nashville to sign the paperwork himself that day. To be on the election. So I actually hung around and got to hang out with Gary Johnson for 30 minutes. He was that cool that he actually hung out with a group of 12 of us just shooting the shit.
That's awesome.
So he got my vote for just basically hanging out. I knew he wasn't going to win anyway, but
That's not the better. Point. When you vote third party, there is a small impact when you vote third party. At least you're giving the finger to the Republicrats or the Demopublicans, at least you're counted. You're taking a roll call saying you're in the system, but you're not supporting the system in that sense. So I do support third party candidates in that regard.
Yeah.
I'm going to vote for Gary.
Yeah. And besides that, the only time I'll ever vote at all is if there's something to be voted on. If Tennessee was vote, check this box. If you want to pass marijuana legalization, I would go do that. And I would pick I don't think they'll allow you to just vote on items. I think you have to pick candidates too, which is unfortunate. But that is the only time I'll vote. Otherwise, I'm not a part of this. I'm not going to vote. It's ridiculous and stupid.
Mm-hmm.
And Mike has never voted his entire life, I don't think.
There's nobody I've ever seen worth freaking voting
exactly.
for. Exactly. And what's really funny is the arguments that Republicans and Democrats make. Oh, if you vote for a third party, you're just taking votes away from. You're just taking. I'm like, well, yeah, you are. That's the freaking point. I don't want you to have my vote.
Exactly. I totally agree with you. When you said I think me and Mike have both talked about this on the podcast before that we think the bigger statement is if nobody turned out for an election. If only the candidates turned out to vote for themselves, that's a bigger message than. You voting for your lesser two evil bullcrap that you want
to
do.
Oh, yeah. I've thrown out a call to our listeners to not vote. That and remove the word to remove the phrase land of the free from the national anthem. Because we're not.
Home of the land of the free, home of the brave is you're walking through the domesticated farm animal corral at the airport to be virtually strip searched before you get an airplane by a government agent. It's just crazy. Mm-hmm.
I've read all your text messages.
Home of the brave.
Yeah. Yeah. No. It's this is a fun interview already. I like it. So,
and we're not trying to overthrow the government. We're just unsatisfied customers.
Oh. Yeah. Funny side story, Troy. One time, one of my ex-girlfriends joined the Navy, and she's going to get a job that required security clearance because she's going to be in, like, naval intelligence or something. So they sent out an interview lady to, like, background check her to make sure she's not, you know, a terrorist trying to overthrow the government. And one of the questions is, like,
they came to interview you. Yeah, they came to interview me. I forgot about that.
And they're like, have you ever thought about overthrowing the government? And I had to stifle laughter. I'm like, oh, she's serious. Okay, no, I've not. Yeah. Like, who hasn't thought about that? Anyway, did you follow the Oregon standoff? I minorly kind of followed it and the basically assassination at the end of it.
Yeah. It seems like a complicated situation there. I'm not really that.
Yeah.
I don't know that I understand. I'm comfortable saying I understand what was happening there.
Yeah. It seemed like they shouldn't have been there in the first place. So I'm not agreeing with their actions. Like, I don't feel that there was any reason for them to go up there to block, to stand, you know, to have the standoff in the first place. But at the same time, the video footage I saw definitely appeared that they assassinated an unarmed man holding his, you know, surrendering. I can see your point, not want to comment. Like, I didn't follow it well, but, you know, I made my theories that, you know, I don't think they should have been there, and it was a little shady at the end.
Yeah, I agree. Sorry.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Mike. So, yes. I didn't mean to run with it.
Clusterfuck from the word go. I mean,
you followed it a little bit, too?
A little bit, and it just seems like, I mean, this is what happens when you give all the idiots guns. I'm sorry, but that's just the way it came off to me. I mean, you got a bunch of people that the whole thing shouldn't have happened. Neither side should have been there. I mean, and in the end, what always happens, you end up with like completely unnecessary collateral damage.
Yeah. Which I kind of just see that like a lot of Americans at this point are sort of on that powder keg kind of threshold. We're like, we're tired of our liberties being taken. And some of the fringe elements are starting to snap, you know, before.
It's just one more freaking case of we are the government. If you stand up against us in any way, you will get shot.
And it becomes, for them, the government has to be, the perception has to be maintained that the federal government is supreme, invincible, and undefeated. Yeah. So you knew they weren't going to let the Bundys win that ranch thing in Nevada.
No.
And that was going to come because, and that's actually an Oath Keeper. When the Department of Justice is talking about what to do about this rogue sheriff in Calumet County, and, the DEA agent, who's kind of the villain in the story, he's like, hey, you can't let him get away with this because, if he does, then every, you know, every Buford Pusser sheriff in the country with a bone to pick is going to be giving the federal government the finger. And he said, so you got to go in there and smash him down and bring him into the fold, make an example out of him. And I do believe that. I think again, I'm no Obama lover, but to his credit, it didn't end up like Waco,
Yeah.
So he did show a lot of restraint. The guy's a national socialist, but he has shown they learned from that egregious and terrible massacre there in Waco, Texas. So they, you know, one guy still paid with his life, but you know, it wasn't 76.
Yeah, that's I've read and watched quite a bit about Waco, and that was a debacle. Like, that was just – we might want to do an episode about that one day.
About Waco?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That was – I mean, I'm not saying David Koresh wasn't nutty as hell, but that was bad on the government.
We're supposed to be living in a free country where it's – you know, where you're free to be nutty as hell.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Supposedly. Supposedly, yeah.
Supposedly, yeah. It's funny.
It's only okay to be nutty as hell if you're actually running for political office, yeah. is what I get.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Yeah. That's actually something I want to talk about in a little bit. The election. You write in this sort of freedom field. Obviously, you're pretty passionate about that. Do you see people waking up to freedom, or it's, do you still see the great divide of like people with a glossed over eyes and just not, you know, hell government?
Well, you know, the Trump phenomenon is interesting to me because, you know, I think you have a lot of low information voters, you know, Tea Partiers, evangelicals, but I think there's a large contingent of them that are support Trump for no other reason other than he's an outsider. That he's like the bull in the China shop, in the neoconservative establishment China shop, and he's just, you know, barreling through this place, knocking over shelves and smashing all the dishes. And I think there is an element of his supporters that are like that. I think you see that like on LouRockwell.com. There's a lot of, they're very friendly to Trump, not because they like his politics at all, but because of the damage he's doing to the party. And hopefully that it'll reshape it. There's a chance that it can reshape itself in a more traditional conservative or paleo conservative philosophy. So I think people are, I'm hopeful people are waking up, but we're a long ways away from any mass awakening. Yeah, it's got to get a lot worse before it gets better.
See, you actually kind of sprung me on. A question I had a little bit further down, but I'm going to bump it up now. You know, I kind of had hope that people were waking up, you know, that people, the freedom, you know, liberty movement was growing. But I think this election, like, really was a slap in the face, because I don't follow politics. We already established that. I'm not going to vote. But it seemed like the big two front runners are Sanders and Trump. And it's like, are we in a, like, a circus? Like, it's like, Idiocracy is becoming true. Like, we're voting for fucking wrestlers here.
Yeah.
I would have never, like, if you said, hey, do you think Trump or Sanders are going to be, like, you know, sort of forerunners here? Like, and I still don't think they even have a chance. Like, but if it was popular vote, I think it would probably come down to them. Like, because legitimately, like, I don't think Hillary Clinton is sort of too tarnished at this point. I don't think people really give a shit about her.
Oh no, she's getting pretty damn tarnished. I mean, I haven't been listening closely, but people are pissed off at her right now for something I don't remember.
Lots of things.
I could be such a fucking pundit,
but I honestly think that I honestly think the Democrats and the Republicans are going to randomly pick someone that's not even who the people are wanting.
Look.
I don't know.
Yeah, the scariest thing about the election right now, the scariest thing about all this, looking at all the candidates, the thing that keeps me up at night, somebody's going to have to win this damn thing.
Exactly. I think it's great. I just sit back and watch it. It gets further off the rails, and it's just, you know, like George Carlin used to joke about it, like, When fascism comes to America, it's not going to be in jackboots and, you know, people Sieg-heiling and goose-stepping, you know, through the town square. Every country's experience with fascism is different. You know, in Italy, it was, you know, Benito Mussolini's fashion sense. You know, in Germany, you know, a people that are very ordered and docile to begin with, you know, they fell in line with marching orders and you know, blaming the Jews for all the hardship they had in the 20s during the hyperinflation. But in America, he said, when it comes to America, it's going to be, wearing Nike sneakers and smiley face shirts. He goes, it's going to be our own experience with it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, and Trump, it's just off the chain. It's weird. the Idiocracy comment's brilliant because it's like, what was it, Elizondo, President Elizondo, with the giving the State of the Union.
Nacho something.
I don't know. Camacho was in there somewhere.
Yeah. Not to do Camacho Jones or something.
Yeah, it's like that's where we're going.
He's reading it, and it's barely coherent. He can't even speak in a complete sentence. It's like he's reading off a Twitter text or something off of his
monitor.
And he's shooting. Everybody's like gets upset, and he's like shoots his machine gun up in the air. It's just classic.
Yeah.
It's heading for. I mean, that's supposed to be 500 years in the future. This could be like a couple election cycles from now. We could have somebody as crazy as that. It's great.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I think fondly back on the time, so that was just a movie and not a documentary.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I love that. Episodes of Owl My Balls. I mean, the guy sits in his recliner and, you know, he's got his entire life is within arm's reach in his recliner, including his bathroom. The TV show is Owl My Balls. And he's hitting the genitals.
Then there was the award-winning movie Ass, which was just like 90 minutes of close-up of somebody's ass, which won, I think, 17 Oscars, including Best Original Screenplay.
Yeah.
It's great. It's just great. It's great. It's hard to get to this point where you can laugh about it because like everybody starts out very hopeful. They're like, well, you know, if I get involved, I can help. change. No, you can't change anything, man. Just sit back and enjoy the ride. And this is like as it stumbles towards the abyss. We can all be encouraged to know that something, hopefully something good, will evolve out of all this wreckage that's headed our way. But yeah, all you can do is laugh. I had a book. I don't know if you bleep out. I've heard a couple F-bombs, but
I'm going to rip.
I had an idea of a book that I was going to write. It was going to be called Dumb Fuckistan. And that's in the works yet. I'm still working out the plot points on that. But I don't know if Amazon will let me put it up. We'll see.
I will push that book so hard. You'll become my, like, New York Times bestseller.
Dumb fucking stab. Yeah.
Yeah, that already sounds good.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I guess that's about all I really have.
Okay.
I had a question about your biggest concern for 2016, but I think you're pretty much along with us, and you're just going to pop popcorn and laugh about it anyway.
Just sit back and enjoy the show, man. It's just it gets weirder and weirder every day by the day. So it's just great. I just love it.
Yeah. See, yeah, talking to you, I think I want to bump up Oath Keepers in the reading list and sort of snub another book that I'd started. So at least I had read, you know, your other book before this. The other book that I got sent was part 10 in a book series, and I've not read any of them. You know, and I was hoping, you know, some books like sort of preamble, like give you some back history. I have no idea what's going on in this book. It's no idea.
They said a little bit. Yeah. What is it? Yeah. Okay. Well, there's a lot of that out there. I think a lot of the self-published and indie guys think that if they do they keep cranking out extra volumes of and sequels to their series, you know, they're going to get a payday out of it. But
yeah, it's one of your fellow Prepper Press authors, and I just I'm reading it, but it's not badly written by any means. No. It's Joe Nobody's Holding Their Own series.
Oh, okay.
It's well written that I've read so far, but it just, like, I have no idea what's going on, except for apparently there was a collapse, I assume. Yeah. So
he's very popular, Glenn Tate, too, and people like that serial. Like, they like the 10-book thing, you know, because they're voracious readers. I'm not a voracious reader. I like to get in and get out, and then I get bored.
Yeah.
I get bored, and I'll move on to something else. So I try to keep my books real short, you know, 60,000 words, 200 pages.
Yeah.
and try to build some colorful Pulp Fiction-y kind of characters and then throw them all in the pot and have them kill each other and then move on to the next one, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I like that. So it's been great having you on, Troy. We had some good laughs. So tell people where they can find you online, and I'll have you know, show notes to your Amazon author page so they can buy your books. And I think I found your Facebook author page too.
Yeah, there's the Troy Grice author page on Facebook, and then there's TroyGrice.com, and then for your readers, they can read the books. I'm going to have them all up for free, but they can read them for free, Indivisible and Oathkeeper, on the website. I put one chapter out a week there, so they don't have to buy anything.
Oh, sweet.
It's not about me getting rich. It's about getting the ideas out there. And, you know, I'll get rich on the next book. You know, the ones I've already done, I'll just give them away, you know. So
I meant to bring that up, too. I guess I'm on your email list somewhere. At some point, I'd signed up for it. I got the notification, I think from TroyGrice.com. About, you know, the publishing the chapters, and I was like, I gotta get this guy on. Like, I like what he's doing here. I like his books, so and that's awesome. Badass. I really liked it. Off topic, I sort of see the economy not so much, you know, on a selling like that anymore, as much as like, I personally, if I like someone, I'm gonna support their work. And a lot of that's sort of where the movement's going. Like, you build people that like you and you're giving away stuff, like, you know, before I have downloaded stuff for free, liked it, and went and bought it because I'm like, I got to support these guys so they make more. Like, you know, a TV series. I'm like, I got to go buy it. I got to support them.
Yeah. Yeah, that's all about free content anymore. It's always about, from the financial standpoint, it's always about the next thing you're working on, not the last thing you did.
Yeah.
You know, so if I get a bunch, you know, if a bunch of people like my stuff, read it for free and like it, whether they support me by buying it on Kindle or not, it's all good with me, because then I'll put the next thing out and then I'll publish it one chapter at a time. And if they really like it, they'll say, I don't want to wait, you know, 26 weeks, 26 chapters later, I'll just go get it now.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And they'll tell their friends about it on Facebook and Twitter, and they'll be like, yeah, I don't want to wait. Fuck it. I'm just going to buy it.
Yeah. It's only $4 anyway.
Yeah.
So, awesome. Yeah, definitely not getting rich yet. I don't have an entourage or anything, so.
Yeah, us neither.
Yeah.
So, but it's been great having you on. This will come out Wednesday. I'll shoot you an email, and then I'll promote it and push it around so people can hear it, and hopefully they'll pick up some of your books, or at least check out your free stuff so they can see, you know, if it fits with them, and then if they like it, buy more.
Yeah, just follow the website, and they'll get an email every week saying when a new chapter's up.
Awesome. Good talking to you, Troy.
I love your website and love your work, and I really appreciate you sharing your audience with me. It's been a lot of fun.
Oh, no,
wait, you actually like our stuff?
He's one of our 6 listeners. I'm just kidding.
Well, on that bombshell, I guess it's time to end.
All right.
So this is Couch Potato Mike.
And James.
And this has been Troy Grice. DIY to survive, you folks.
Talk to you later, Troy.
You guys.
Take care.